Elizabeth Elliot says that restlessness makes us cynical. We need certainty, surety, security, and that can only be found in God Himself. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. As you think about God's unchanging principles for your life, here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking again today about helping your child to be good. A child is an individual, and you must remember to ask the Lord to help you to know your child and what your child needs most. If I sound very rigid and very highly disciplined and maybe even cruel to your children, think about the Spartans. The ancient Spartans trained their children to a system of rigid discipline, of constant self-denial. The child was subjected to this from infancy onward, and this feature of their training had much to do with giving to the Spartans their distinguishing characteristics of simplicity of manners, powers of endurance, and dauntless bravery. Now, those are three things we really don't think very much about today, do we? Simplicity of manners, powers of endurance, and bravery. But think about them. Wouldn't you like for your children to have simplicity of manners, powers of endurance, and dauntless bravery? Well, the growth in luxury and materialism has certainly militated against teaching children those things. But I've been talking about denying a child what he wants, not merely for the sake of denial itself, but in order that the child should not have everything he wants merely because he wants it. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying? I certainly hope that I'm not coming across as cruel and heartless. Far from it. If I didn't learn to be merciful with my own child, and I feel sure that God did teach me some things about mercy and grace, surely having six precious grandchildren, and they are perfect grandchildren, as I'm sure you would recognize, has taught me mercy. When I see my daughter and her husband discipline them, sometimes I am grateful for their willingness to discipline them. But there are times when I think, well, this would be a place for just a little bit more mercy. And there are times when I feel the other way. You know, you're just being a little bit too lax here. I think you ought to tighten up. Who is sufficient for these things? Not one father or mother in the universe has ever had all the wisdom, naturally speaking. God gives you wisdom. He gives you brains. He gives you common sense. He gives you the instincts of fathers and mothers. But there is always the need to get down on our knees and say, Lord, help me to be the father that I should be to my children. Help me to be a wise mother. When you train a child's will, you're helping him to be good, not merely a good specimen of humanity or a mere piece of child material, but a living organism, marvelously conceived, first in the thought of the Creator God, and lent to the father and mother to mold for him. Do you think of your children as being lent to you by God, not permanently, but for a few years, to mold them faithfully as co-workers with God? All possibility of the highest manhood and womanhood is working in that little boy or that little girl from the day he is born, well, from 9 months before he is born, from the day he is conceived. Think of the mother of Moses. She must have seen in that little baby the possibilities which were not in any baby of Pharaoh's house. Surely she didn't see all of them, but there was something very special about that baby Moses that led the mother to make that little basket for him, not to discard him as she had been commanded to do. And, of course, it was in the sovereign purpose of God that he was rescued by Pharaoh's daughter and reared in Pharaoh's house. This was preparation for the job that God was going to assign Moses later on. And think of the story of little Samuel, the little boy who was sleeping in the temple when he heard his name called and ran to Eli the prophet. It's to Eli's credit that he saw that Samuel was capable of receiving the word of the Lord in a way that he was not. And he realized on the third trip that Samuel made to Eli's bed, saying, "What did you want? You called me." Eli realized then that it was the Lord who was calling him. He did not despise the childhood. He recognized that Samuel was capable of receiving a word from the Lord, a word that God had not given to Eli, even though Eli possessed that mysterious method of discerning God's will, which was called the Urim and the Thummim. I don't think anybody knows exactly what the Urim and Thummim were, but it was some material object, we suppose, that revealed God's will. Trebonius was Luther's teacher, and it is said that he bared his head when he entered the schoolroom, where he was looked up to as a teacher. His reason for this was that he recognized in every child the possibility of lofty attainment in his developed individuality. And we can hardly doubt that this attitude of Trebonius had a very great influence in bringing to fruition the powers in his pupil, Martin Luther. Trebonius and Eli are, at least in these particulars, a pattern for parents today. Your child may be your superior in many ways. Many a child is the superior of his parents. When I watch my daughter in her management of her home and her family, in her relationships with other people, I watch her with wonder, and I try to think, now, where did she learn that? Where did she get that characteristic? Some of the characteristics clearly came from her father's side of the family. Others, I know, came from my side of the family, and then there's always that mystery. God designed your child. He is the possessor of a marked and distinctive individuality, and you must honor him for his possibilities. Many a child is the superior of his parents in the basis and scope of character, says Trumbull, in the attributes of genius, and in the instincts of high spiritual perception. I can remember my mother saying to me more than once, "I feel just like the hen that hatched the duckling. I'm standing on the bank of the pond, flapping my wings, while you're sailing away across the water." I'm sure all of you can look back to childhood memories, feelings, and thoughts that you were aware that nobody else knew. I can remember going off by myself in the woods in New Hampshire and finding a little sunny spot in the middle of the woods and sitting down and just pondering the fact that there I was all by myself with my thoughts. And nobody knew what I was thinking about, and nobody knew what I was doing, and I was probably making a tiny little house out of twigs on the moss and thinking about all sorts of things, thinking high thoughts and great thoughts. We are individuals, aren't we? And there is an individuality in us that is not recognized by others, is only known by God. And so it's not easy for parents always to bear in mind that every child is truly an individual, as he was when he was a child. It's much the same in the matter of personal rights as in personal feelings. A child finds that his individuality is constantly ignored because he is a child. A little fellow who had been given a real watch was conscious of an advance in his relative position by that possession. His uncle, having taken his own watch to the watchmaker's, asked the loan of the little fellow's watch for the time being, saying that he could not get along without one. "Can't you get along without a watch?" asked the nephew. "No, I cannot," replied the uncle. "If I had mine at the watchmaker's, would you lend me yours till mine came back?" was the little fellow's searching inquiry. "Why, no, I don't suppose I would," replied the other. But then, you know, I'm a man, and you're a boy. Well then, said the individual boy to the individual man, if you can't get along without a watch, and you wouldn't lend me yours if I needed it, I can't get along without a watch, and I can't let you have mine. Now, the trouble in that case was that the boy's individuality was not sufficiently recognized and honored by the manner of that request for his watch. It seemed to be taken for granted that because he was a child, he had no such rights to his own possessions as a man has to his, and that he put no such value on that which he had, as a man would be sure to put on his belongings. Against that assumption, the child quite naturally, and with a good show of logic, resolutely asserted himself. If, on the other hand, the boy had been appealed to as an equal, to render a favor to the other because of a special and a clearly explained need, there is no reason to doubt that he would have been prompt to respond to it, with a feeling of satisfaction in being able to render that favor. I wanted to read that story straight out of the book because it does point out something I wouldn't have thought of myself, the need to treat a child as an equal in a situation where the child really is an equal. The child had a watch equal in its usefulness to that which the uncle had put in the watchmakers. But the uncle had treated him as an inferior. May God give us wisdom to honor a child as a child should be honored.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.